John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
It's go time. It's go time. Let's go, baby.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5 into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills. The night before the final preseason game with the cuts coming down this weekend, who's on the bubble for the Buffalo Bills? We'll talk about that with you. Also tonight, Jim Branstadter, color analyst on the Lions Radio Network, will join us. Greg Gabriel from the National Football Post will join us to talk about what goes into making a 53-man roster. And how was your experience at the new and improved Ralph Wilson Stadium last Saturday? Andy Major, the Bills' vice president of guest experience, will be in studio with us at 8:30.
This is pandemonium.
At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end zone. Touchdown, C.J. Spiller.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go, another game coming up tomorrow night. Believe it or not, ready or not, here they come, the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions, the fifth and final preseason game in what's been a long preseason for the Bills. It ends tomorrow night, 7 o'clock kickoff for the Bills and the Detroit Lions. Hope you're able to catch that game tomorrow. Good evening. Welcome to the show tonight. We'll try to get you set up for tomorrow night's preseason finale. Tonight, in this next 2 hours, the night before the game, it's almost like a two-hour pregame show for us tonight. With this question on the table, you can talk about whatever you'd like, but we want to know from you, which Buffalo Bills are on the bubble going into this game tomorrow night? Which Buffalo Bills do you think have to sweat it out with the final cutdown just a couple of days away? Which Bills need a good game to lock down a roster spot? And who's on the bubble? What roster battles will play out tomorrow night? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number to call, or toll-free from outside Buffalo. It's a free call at 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter. You can let us know what you think via Twitter, at John Murphy Show. The roster decisions are paramount coming up over the next few days. The Bills will play tomorrow, and then by Saturday at 4 p.m., they have to cut 22 names off the roster. They're at 75 now. They need to be at 53 by 4 p.m. on Saturday, and then there's a 10-day or a 10-person practice squad that can be formed 24 hours after that, starting Sunday. So some tough decisions to be made. Head coach Doug Marrone has said several times this week that he is meeting almost constantly with general manager Doug Whaley and the personnel folks, a couple of times a day anyway, to talk about these roster considerations. It's not easy trying to figure out who's healthy, who's not healthy, who's going to be eligible to come to be ready to play as far as health, and when will that occur, to time that out, to get the right mix to put special teams into consideration, to balance development issues with current roster needs. All of that goes into it. All of these issues we'll discuss with Greg Gabriel, former Chicago Bears personnel executive, now a columnist for the National Football Post. Greg Gabriel is going to join us today to talk about creating the 53-man roster. But tonight we want to know from you about the Bills roster. Who do you think is on the bubble? Who needs a good game tomorrow night against Detroit to lock down a roster spot? 803-0550, the number to call, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can do it by Twitter as well, at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets. Jason Sins, only ones I'd be surprised to see cut, Landon Cohen and Quanjo. He'd be surprised. Justin Gravestock tweets, the story of the game is who will be the backup quarterback. Very eager to see how Palmer and Tool play. I agree with that. I think that's going to be something to watch. Pat tweets in, Manuel. He thinks Manuel needs a good game to lock down a roster spot. Wrong. Wrong, Pat. Darren Reithmiller, EJ Manuel. I guess that's the smart aleck Twitter way to do it tonight. EJ Manuel is going to be on the roster, folks. He's going to be starting against Chicago. Get it through your skull. Bills' number one fan. I'm going to start with the guy the Bills just brought in to replace Thad Lewis on the roster, Jordan Palmer. EJ, easy, according to Chris Olay. Yep, Twitter is alive and well. TJ Graham, a couple of people have said, definitely TJ Graham, Sean Dorman says, hasn't showed anything spectacular so far. Terry Maughan tweets in TJ Graham. I would say this, TJ Graham is in a crowded field at wide receiver. However, I'm impressed by TJ Graham's preseason, and I'm impressed by how competitive he has been this preseason. I think he knows that he's in a battle for a roster spot here. Obviously, he does. And I think he's responded very well in a very competitive fashion. He has handled a ton of return work this year, trying to get his hands on the ball as much as possible. I think when he's been there in offense, both in practice and in preseason games, he's competed hard. I think T.J. Graham Well, let's get to the wide receivers for a second. Mark Kelso on the show with us yesterday, and he said this even on the broadcast, the play-by-play broadcast last Saturday. Kelso thinks they're going to keep 7 wide receivers. That seems like a lot to me. But do the math. Watkins, Mike Williams, Robert Woods, that's 3. Marquise Goodwin is 4. Marcus Easley is 5. Chris Hogan is 6. And T.J. Graham is 7. Do you keep 7 wide receivers? Mark Kelso thinks so. I don't know. That's a lot. To me, the other interesting, intriguing thing at wide receiver is who wins the slot battle. We're not just talking about who's going to make the roster or who's going to start. Who's going to be the starting receiver at the slot wide receiver position? It's been a pretty good battle. T.J. Graham versus, or Chris Hogan, I should say, versus Robert Woods. And I'm really intrigued to see how that plays out tomorrow, what further evidence we get on that tomorrow. Offensive line, there's some interesting decisions to make involving some veterans. Craig Urbick, Doug Legursky, Chris Harrison, trying to come back from a year off. I think the 3 of those, are they bubble guys? Then maybe. You know, they might be right around the bubble, if not on the bubble. I think the emergence of the rookies, Cyril Richardson and Chantrell Henderson most notably, I think has put some of those guys in jeopardy, some of those more veteran guys. Cyrus Quanjo has not had a good preseason, but he's going to make the roster as a second-round draft pick. So I would watch those offensive linemen. Tight end, Tony Moiaki. I think we're all disappointed that Moiaki has not been able to participate more in preseason this year, in the preseason games, as he continues to struggle with injuries. And, of course, the backup quarterback, Jeff Toole, Jordan Palmer, both of them competing for the number 2 job. It's not going to, you know, people, again, the Twitterati tweets in E.J. Manuel needs to lock down a roster spot with a good performance. That's silly, if inane. But I think the other two, Jordan Palmer and Jeff Toole, and I think Jordan Palmer is going to have the biggest chance. I'm not sure how much Toole will play, if at all, tomorrow night. They've seen an awful lot of him. They know exactly what they have with Jeff Toole. So those are some of the spots. Defensive line, what do you do with Landon Cohen? I think you'd keep him. But somebody else will have to go. What do you do with some of the cornerback spots? I think there have been some good moments from guys like Kamal McElwain and Mario Butler. Butler, I believe, is still not ready to play, but as far as injuries. So there are some interesting decisions to make. I think the Bills have had some players emerge on the defensive side of the ball who maybe they weren't sure what they'd get, especially at linebacker when you think about Preston Brown and Randell Johnson. I think you could say the same about Landon Cohen, Corbin Bryant, Stephon Charles. There have been some good moments in preseason for them that they're keeping the heat on some of the more veteran guys. Give us your thoughts on the roster battles tomorrow night, what you think might happen. I think the game is going to play out like this. I think the first teamers are going to play, obviously. Doug Marone has said that. And then I think after not too long, maybe the first quarter, maybe a little bit less, the other guys come in and the roster battles begin in earnest. And that's where it gets interesting if you're into who's on the 53-man roster. How do you think that 53-man roster will shape up? Which players are on the bubble? And who needs to play well tomorrow night to win a spot on the roster for the Buffalo Bills? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Clayton Waller tweets in Butler and Rodriguez. Okay. EJ, according to a couple of other Twitters. Jake Satter tweets, and I think people just want to see EJ play good. I want to see him play well. I want to see him play well, too. Does he need a good performance to lock down a roster spot? No. Absolutely no. I think he's on the roster. David Tidd tweets in, I think Mormon needs to have a good game. There's competition there now at the punter spot with Gay, the guy, Jordan Gay, the guy who was signed yesterday. So, yeah, I think Brian Mormon is a guy to watch. There are some interesting things going on this roster, and if we know anything based on last year's experience, this coaching staff, this scouting staff, this personnel department is more than willing to bring in players and make adjustments throughout the course of the season and before the initial roster is set for the opener. So keep your eye on some of these roster battles. 803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to weigh in on that. Bills, Lions tomorrow. E.J. Manuel and the Buffalo offense trying to get on track, and they'll have a chance to do it tomorrow with some work in the first quarter. They were booed off the field at halftime of the loss to Tampa last Saturday night. The Bills with 1 win, 3 losses. Head coach Doug Marone was asked the other day about his philosophy of playing time in the final preseason game.
I think it depends on the situation. If you told me that, you know, hey, we were a veteran team and we've been, a lot of playoff experience, a lot of winning experience, and, you know, got guys 8-9 years, and they've played together, and they've proven themselves, and they worked their butts off here in training camp, and, you know, I might tend to rest them during this time, or, you know, where we are right now, I don't think we can afford to. I mean, if you sit up here and you say, hey, guys, we got to work and we got to get better, you know, how do I not go out there and try to play some guys to get better? I mean, then you guys would be like, hey, this is, you know, it's an opportunity to get better. And, you know, sometimes practice can be a false sense of, you know, where you are, and you get out there in a game, and sometimes during a game it's where you are, and sometimes it's not as good as it may seem, and sometimes it's not as bad as it may seem. You know, but that's where you have to be good, is when you get out there and you play in those games, and that's where you can – people kind of separate themselves a little bit.
Doug Marrone talking about his philosophy of playing time. Sounds like, and we know this, he wants his starters to play a little bit tomorrow night. What about E.J. Manuel, the number one quarterback on the roster, a guy who clearly has a roster spot locked up, regardless of what people on Twitter say? Manuel, a topic of conversation all week, and Doug Marrone was asked about him and what he'd like to see from E.J. Manuel.
At that position, just him alone, we have to have people around him playing well. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, we have to play well around him. You know, there are things that go on that, you know, are very difficult to see. But, you know, at the same sense, like I said before, you know, you watch the game and people say, hey, what happened on this play? What happened on that play? And sometimes, you know, people aren't where they should be. And, you know, it's the same old story. You know, the quarterback gets, when you win it, he gets probably too much credit. And when you lose, he gets too much of the blame. But to answer your question, you know, hey, we're going to progress with him. You know, he's not going to turn around and be a franchise guy overnight. That doesn't happen often in this league. We're going to work with him. He's working hard to progress. We're going to stick with him. I'm going to support him 110%, and we're going to get him better. And the way we improve offensively is we make sure that as he gets better, everyone gets better around them.
Doug Marrone talking about his quarterback, E.J. Manuel. They're going to stick with him. They're going to work with him. That's where they're at right now. What about Manuel himself? He met with the media earlier this week. One criticism that came out was that some believe that when he throws the ball, E.J. Manuel may try to aim it too much. He was asked about that yesterday.
I felt like I pressed, you know, after we had those first two series with turnovers, trying to make plays. And, you know, you can't do that. You know, as a quarterback, you have to truly just let it fall off your shoulder and just keep playing, you know. When I did go back and watch the film, statistically, I had a pretty good game. But nonetheless, the way it went, you know, just the drives early in the first half and then going into the, you know, right before halftime was very rough. But nonetheless, you know, the biggest thing I took from it is just you can't allow, you know, three series, however many series that aren't going well, going your way, even though it may not be something that you did, you can't allow it to affect your game. You know, you can't try to make plays that aren't there. You still have to go and just play the game. You can't force anything.
E.J. Manuel talking about his game against Tampa Bay last Saturday. And he was also asked about overanalyzing every bad play and how he avoids overanalyzing every play that he makes.
That's the main thing. You just got to let it happen. You know, I think the not necessarily the less you think, the better things will be. But, you know, it's kind of a balance. You know, it's a balance you have to find. And, you know, I think it was one of those situations, you know, I try to look at the positive out of it. I think it was a great learning situation for me to go through something like that. But nonetheless, to come out in the second half and, you know, talk to the team and say, hey, look, guys, this is about respect. And even myself, I told myself, you got to come out here, you know, and I want to leave this field with my head high, my chest out and things like that, even though we didn't get a chance to win the game. But to still come off the field respectfully, I knew I wasn't going to play the whole second half. So I was very, you know, happy how we finished before I came out. But nonetheless, you have to limit all those errors.
Yep, got to get better, simply put, for E.J. Manuel. Got to get better. Some willing to throw in the towel on him already. The Bills are not. I wouldn't be either. I think there's enough there to keep at it. And it hasn't been an easy ride for E.J. Manuel so far. But I think there's enough to keep at it. Give us your thoughts on the Bills roster. Where are the roster battles going into this final preseason game? Which players need a good game to solidify or lock down a spot on the roster? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter, at John Murphy Show. We'll start with a call from Carl in Clarence. Carl, who needs to play well tomorrow night to win a spot on the roster?
Well, I couldn't even begin to guess, but I don't think Graham's going. I don't think Tool's going. I think the definition of a backup quarterback for an NFL team is one that can possibly win you 50% of the games, and I'm pretty sure Tool could fit that description. I guess you got a quick question. Do you really think the starters are going to play only a quarter? It seems like they need a little more work, and I wonder if Do you know if Detroit's going to use any of their starters? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Carl. As far as Detroit, Jim Caldwell has not said anything at all about how long his starters are going to play. He's been very close-mouthed about it. I believe the Bills starters are, you know, I think the defensive starters are not going to play long at all, maybe one series, maybe two. I think the starters on offense could play a little bit longer, a couple of series, but not much more than that. And, you know, everybody knows that they need to be sharper on the offensive side of the ball, but you really do run the risk of suffering an injury. This is the fifth preseason game. You could argue, boy, if they don't have it yet, they're not going to get it. And they got to get it, really. They got to, you know, they got to be ready for Chicago, regardless of what they show against Detroit. So, yeah, I think it's a couple of series for the defense and maybe slightly longer for the offense tomorrow. That's unofficial. I don't have any word on that, but that's just kind of the feeling I get. And I think, you know, you're talking about first quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if they're gone starters by the end of the first quarter. Jake and Elma. Hello, Jake. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hi, John. I think something to watch tomorrow night is whether they're going to keep seven wide receivers or four running backs. I don't think they can do both. I think one or the other has to give there, and tomorrow night I'll have a lot to say about that.
Seven wide – Kelso's talking about seven wide receivers. That seems like a lot, doesn't it, Jake?
But it depends on what they think they need. Do they need four running backs? If they don't, then they can get the extra wide receiver.
It'd be hard to envision this roster without Spiller, Jackson, Dixon, and Brown on the roster. Bryce Brown, I think. And I think they like what Frank Summers does at the fullback spot. So probably five running backs, if you count fullback as one of them. I have a hard time seeing this roster without Frank Summers, C.J. Spiller, Fred Jackson, Anthony Dixon, or Bryce Brown. Now, does that necessarily mean you can't keep seven wide receivers? Not necessarily. You'd have to go short somewhere else. They brought in a punt kickoff specialist yesterday, Jordan Gay. There's a roster spot there. I just don't see seven wide receivers. I hear what Mark Kelso's saying, but I don't see seven wide receivers. So I'm thinking you got Woods, Williams, Watkins, Goodwin, Hogan, and then you're talking Easley or Graham. I don't know if you keep both Easley and Graham. And Hogan, I think, would be close to the bubble, if not on the bubble. I think they like what the potential that Robert Woods has to be their slot receiver. I think they envision an offense where their three, when they play with three wideouts, are Williams, Watkins, and Woods. But it's hard to ignore what Chris Hogan has done, how sturdy he's been out of the slot receiver spot, the progress and jump that he's made in the last year in terms of his size and his ability and his contributions to the team. Hard to ignore that. That's going to be a very, very difficult call if it comes down to that call, Woods or Hogan for the slot receiver. And if Hogan's not the slot receiver, if Woods wins that battle, what becomes of Chris Hogan then? Do you keep him on the roster? I don't know. That's a very, very difficult call. Maybe the most difficult call on this roster right now. Give us your thoughts on the roster battles, which Buffalo Bills need to play well to lock down a spot on the roster. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Jake Satter tweets, I believe Hogan needs to play well in order to keep getting first-team reps in the regular season. Tyler Traub tweets in, I think Randall Johnson is on the bubble, but will probably make the cut considering our lack of depth at linebacker. I think Randall Johnson's going to make the team. I think there have been a lot of good things from Randall Johnson in this preseason. Depth at linebacker, when you think about Ty Powell, Randall Johnson, and Preston Brown, I think there's some depth there. Maybe depth that wasn't there going into the preseason, really. Kyle Anderson tweets in, Graham, T.J. Graham versus Easley, if only they keep six wide receivers. Raymond Bonilla tweets in, any chance Mormon is at risk with the new punter kickoff player they picked up? Yeah, there's that chance. I think those guys kind of live on the edge, those punters. And John Harrington tweets in, will Moyaki even play? Is he still on the team? He is on the team. I'm not sure if he'll play. He hasn't had much practice time yet today or this week. So those are some of the issues that we see. But what do you see? Roster battles for the Thursday night game. What would you like to see in tomorrow night's game against Detroit? What do you need the Bills to show you against the Lions tomorrow night? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Coming up tonight, Jim Brandstatter is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He is a Michigan legend. He is the color analyst on the Detroit Lions radio broadcast. He is the play-by-play voice this year of the Michigan Wolverines college football team. Longtime Michigan man Jim Brandstetter joins us at the bottom of this hour. 8 o'clock, Western New York native Greg Gabriel joins us, former Chicago Bears director of college scouting, writes now for the National Football Post, and has written a post recently about picking the 53-man roster. We thought that was timely, so we'll talk with Greg Gabriel about that. And at 8:30, the fan experience at Ralph Wilson Stadium. What did you think of the first game in the renovated stadium? What would you like to see moving forward? Andy Major, Bills Vice President of Guest Experience, live in studio with us, coming up at 8:30 tonight. That's the lineup. A couple of more tweets. Glenn Wickard, I need to have EJ play at least four series. He needs work. Paul McManus tweets in. Marone saying, we need players to play well to help EJ. Maybe someday our quarterback will elevate the team instead. Yeah, maybe. They're probably not there just yet, but yeah, maybe he will in his second year, looking to make his 11th start of his NFL career on Sunday, September 7th. Maybe EJ will get to the point where he elevates the team. You're right about that. Tomorrow night's game blacked out. You know that by now. No local TV, live TV of the game tomorrow night, the Bills and the Lions. It will be broadcast on tape delay status, though, Friday night on Channel 7 in Buffalo, WKBW-TV at 7 o'clock. And then tape delay on Friday night at 7:30 in Rochester on Wham-TV, Channel 13. Also on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel on Saturday, 2:30 p.m. So you'll get a chance to see the game on any of those outlets. You can hear the game as it happens live tomorrow. Kickoff at 7 o'clock with myself and Mark Kelso. Pre-game coverage starts at 4 on this station, many of these Bills Radio Network stations, the Bills and the Detroit Lions, coming up tomorrow night. Hey, it happened again today, just a couple of hours ago. The folks at Nickel City Foods, Nickel City Catering, did it again. Dropped off an amazing buffet. This one Italian-themed with... you put a little thought into this, Jay, obviously. What do we have?
What a producer's supposed to do, right?
Chicken parm, ziti, what else? Lasagna. It was just amazing. Really great buffet from the folks at Nickel City Foods. Have you heard about them? Fresh, high-quality food catered to your home or office, and experienced staff to make your party a success. They offer office catering. They'll bring in lunches for meetings, that sort of thing. Party catering, big or small. Creative catering for any occasion. You can talk to their catering manager, and they'll give you ideas. With quality ingredients made to order, they are corporate catering professionals, Nickel City Foods. Check out their website. You can see what we mean. NickelCityFoods.com. Or call them at 681-0837. 681-0837. NickelCityFoods.com. It's catering for your office, for your home, for your big party. It's amazing stuff, and we got to sample it again. I think that's, what, the third time in the last month or so they brought in food, Jay, in the last couple of months, maybe?
Yeah, I kind of like this. This is good.
It's a good deal.
It really, really good tonight, too. In the past, we say, oh, this is really good, this is really good, and tonight was just the same. I
mean, we branched out a little tonight.
We did. The spread they brought in was unbelievable. It was
ridiculous.
Great. Really good food.
Yep. Thanks to the folks at Nickel City Foods. Check them out online at nickelcityfoods.com, or you can give them a call, 681-0837, for whatever catering you have in mind, a party or office catering, lunches. I think they'll do breakfast, right? Lunches or dinners made to order. NickelCityFoods.com. All right, the Bills and the Lions tomorrow. We're going to talk about the Detroit Lions. They've won two of their first three preseason games. Like the Bills, they're coming off a down year. And like the Bills, they probably think they've got to get moving before the window closes. They've got a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. They've got a young quarterback, Matthew Stafford, going into his sixth season, the prime of his career. They've got arguably the best receiver in the NFL in Calvin Johnson. They have talent. Like the Bills and the Detroit Lions are trying to make it pay off in terms of a playoff spot this year. When we return, we're going to talk with the guy who's got his finger on the pulse of the Lions, Jim Brandstetter, the color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network. He'll be joining us coming up next, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, tonight live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Final preseason game for the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions tomorrow night, 7 o'clock kickoff, the Bills and the Lions at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Let's get a look at the Lions, the Bills' opponents tomorrow night. Joining us on the line, the color analyst for Detroit Lions football and the brand-new play-by-play man for Michigan Wolverines football, Jim Brandstetter. Jim, thank you very much for coming on with us tonight. How you doing?
John, good, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on with you, and thanks very much. I'm looking forward to both the NFL season and Michigan start.
I bet you are. You've been on the Michigan Wolverines broadcast for, what, 30-some years, and now you're moving over?
Yeah, over 30 years now in one capacity or another with different cable TV outlets that used to do tape delayed versions, and then the radio when we did the games live. So it's been a long time. I really have had a great run at it.
Yeah, and now moving over to do play-by-play with Dan Dierdorf. That's a couple of Michigan legends on the Michigan radio broadcast
now.
There you
go. Well, it's going to be fun. Dan and I were teammates on the 1969 team and 70 team, and I'll tell you what, we've known each other 40 years. There's a great chemistry. We've been friends that long, and of course, he reached the pinnacle of play-by-play in Monday Night Football.
Sure.
I mean, that's running the franchise there, so... Yeah. He comes with a great deal of experience, and he brings so much to the table. I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, I think about this a lot. You and Bill Hillgrove in Pittsburgh do this. He does Pitt Panthers and Steelers. You do Michigan Wolverines and the Lions. Are there any scheduling issues you got to work through, Jim?
Yeah, there are some.
I would bet, yeah.
Yeah, you have to grin and bear it. You work your way to wherever you can go. You know, I live really pretty good with a hub in Detroit where I can fly out and get to most places. The most difficult places I need to get are like long-distance central time zone games for the NFL, like noon kicks in Dallas or New Orleans, because that's a long flight. And you kind of, if you go further west to the mountain time zone or Pacific time zone, you gain time in the air, really.
Yeah.
But when you start the game at noon, you really don't gain any time from Detroit. So those are the tough ones. But other than that, it's just find the flight and, you know, do what you can do to get there.
Well, good for you. I'm proud of you and happy that you got all that work going on. Jim Brandstetter, I guess, color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network. He'll be here tomorrow night for the Bills and the Lions. And big change in Detroit this year. First of all, tell us about Jim Schwartz and what kind of job you think he did there in Detroit, Jim, because obviously we've got him now as our defensive coordinator here.
Yeah. Well, Coach Schwartz came in basically to an 0-16 team.
Yep.
It was a total rebuild. And, I mean, we're talking draft picks and free agency and trying to find a way in those first couple of years to be competitive. He did a nice job, and then he got them to the playoffs. And then things kind of fell apart. And most people felt, and I don't think Coach Schwartz would disagree, that they needed to have a better, season than they did a year ago, and that they had too much talent to be where they were. And I think that window of opportunity to get the playoffs and try to get something going toward the Super Bowl was a disappointing, underachieving team a year ago, and that basically cost him. And Jim Caldwell comes in, and he's a guy that said when he walked in the door, he said, "We expect to win now. We're not talking about rebuild. We want to win now." And I think that's what everybody here in Detroit wanted to hear.
I got to ask about Matthew Stafford, who is now 3 years removed from his outstanding season. He had, more than 5,000 yards and 40 touchdown passes in 2011. Has he come back to the pack since then? I mean, he's had, I know, injuries to deal with, but has he regressed since 2011, do you think, Jim?
Well, I don't know whether he's regressed or there's just one thing that Matthew can still make plays. He has physically... His arm is unbelievable. He is very, very gifted. But he can't turn the ball over. And last year, that was one of those issues. He just turned the ball over, threw interceptions, and you can't turn. And then add that to the normal fumbles you're going to get. You can't turn the ball over in the National Football League and expect to win on a consistent basis. And that's up to Matthew. And so they brought in Lombardi, the offensive coordinator from New Orleans, who's worked with Drew Brees.
Yep.
Jim Caldwell's worked with Peyton Manning. Jim Bob Cooter is a quarterback coach who's worked with Brees. They've got awful good pedigrees in regards to quarterbacks. And I think Matthew's taking it to heart that these guys know what they're talking about, and I need to learn, and I need to do what they do so that I don't make the mistakes that ultimately cost me the status of being called, quote-unquote, elite.
Yeah. How has tight end Eric Ebron been, Jim? He's a guy that the Bills took a long look at in the run-up to the draft back in May.
You know, he's been pretty good. He came into camp early, and he kind of dropped some passes, and there was some questions about his hands. But he's worked real hard on it, and what the Lions thought he was going to be is what he has become. It's a matchup problem for a defense because he can line up as a fullback or as a wing like an H-back, and he can be detached from the line of scrimmage as a kind of a flex tight end wide receiver. He gives the defense a lot to look at, and he's got great size and decent speed. So if he gets a matchup against a linebacker or safety,
He can beat them. And I think that's what the Lions were looking at, to add to, you know, they got Golden Tate and they got Calvin Johnson, and you put him, Ebron, out there along with Reggie Bush. You got some weapons right there, and you put some real pressure on the defense.
Yeah, what a great addition Golden Tate is. I mean, almost the perfect complement to Calvin Johnson on the other side, I would think.
No question, and very explosive. I mean, the big thing with him, and I think this is what Nate Burleson, they thought they were going to get from him a year ago, is after the catch the short pass and make a big play out of it. That's what Golden Tate can do. He's got great explosiveness after the catch, and I think that's going to be huge, because Calvin's kind of your deep threat. And if he takes the defense and stretches it, there's going to be room underneath. I'm going to tell you what, either Reggie Bush or Golden Tate both can take those short passes and go the distance.
Let's turn our attention to the defense for a second, Jim. We're on the line with Jim Brandstatter, who's the color analyst on the Detroit Lions radio network. They're here tomorrow night to play the Buffalo Bills at the newly renovated Ralph Wilson Stadium. On the defensive line, you've got Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, two very talented guys who've played in the league, but troubles around both of them a little bit. Suh, for instance, he just can't seem to stay out of trouble sometimes, it seems, on the field.
Huh? No, and it's almost like trouble looks for him, too.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that's going to get reputation calls. I mean, he might do something somebody else would do, but it's going to cost Suh more, and it's going to make headlines just because he is who he is. Nick Fairley, on the other hand, is a guy that, you know, has kind of not lived up to his potential. And one of the things that's interesting is this year, early, he kind of lost his starting position next to Ndamukong to C.J. Mosley. And that was big news, but Nick played well in that last preseason game. But that all goes back to the idea of Jim Caldwell saying, look, you know, we're in this to win now, and we're professionals. If you don't act like it, you don't play like you up to your capabilities, we're going to find somebody who does. He's a no-nonsense guy, and Nick has learned that lesson. And I think that's one of the key moments of this fall camp for him has been taking Nick and sitting him down and making him second team for a while. That got everybody's attention.
How has the draft pick Kyle Van Noy been, the linebacker, your second rounder, right? Ought to bring him young. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's been pretty good, but, you know, he's hurt a little bit. I don't know whether he's got a sports hernia. They don't even know. And I don't know whether he'll even play against the Bills. But he's got all the athletic ability. He's got quickness. I think the one thing they want to see is him develop a little bit more pass rush skill off the edge. That's what they got him for, is kind of to be that edge pass rusher out of a linebacker position. And so far, he's just got to develop that move and learn to work against big tackles from the NFL.
Hey, Jim, is there all a sense that, I mean, it's not unlike the Bills situation. The Bills sit there every year and look at the Patriots on top of their division. I wonder in your division, in the NFC North, if, you know, the Green Bay Packers are the 10,000-pound gorilla that nobody can seem to get around from time to time.
Well, pretty much. And like the Bills, that 10,000-pound gorilla has a quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys look at Brady as, you know, the guy, and we look at Aaron Rodgers. And both of those guys are, I would consider them elite. They've got Super Bowl rings. And to me, that's what separates those guys. Now, I think Detroit is in a position right now that they can compete with Green Bay and Chicago for the NFC North. They're good enough to do that. I think Minnesota's a step behind. But it's in the division. You got to beat Cutler and you got to beat Rodgers. And I think Cutler has issues regarding his defense a little bit. So I think the Lions have an opportunity there. But you're right. The top of the mountain is Green Bay, and the reason it is because that guy that wears number 12 for them.
And I would think, Jim, with Matthew Stafford in his sixth year, with Calvin Johnson in the prime of his career, with the weapons they've added and all those first-rounders on defense, the Lions got to feel like they've got to make their move soon. I mean, the window doesn't stay open very long in this league.
No. You are exactly right. And that's why Caldwell came in his first year and said, we want to win now. It's not about waiting and it's not about rebuilding. It's about winning now. And they feel that window of opportunity is 2 or 3 years wide right now. And maybe they lost a year or two over the past 2 years because of certain situations. And they want to make sure that they take advantage of the talent that they have.
Hey, Jim, have a safe trip here to Buffalo and Western New York. Have a great weekend with the Bills and the Wolverines. And thank you very much for doing this with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Very glad to do it. It's good to be with you guys. Always fun coming into Buffalo in the preseason.
Jim Brandstatter, the color analyst on the Detroit Lions radio network, also the play-by-play voice of Michigan Wolverines football. The Bills and the Lions, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Brandy. That's what they call him, Jim Brandstetter. Longtime Michigan icon, broadcast icon. He's doing the Brady Hoke Show as we speak, I think, tonight in Detroit. Then he's making his way here to Buffalo and do the Bills and Lions tomorrow, and then head back to Ann Arbor to do Michigan football against Appalachian State on Saturday. He'll be a busy man this weekend. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we're going to talk with Greg Gabriel, Buffalo native, former personnel executive, director of college scouting for the Chicago Bears of the NFL. Spent a long time with the New York Giants as well. We'll talk with him about building a 53-man roster. He put up a post at the National Football Post about that a week or two ago. And at 8:30 in studio, Andy Major, the Bills' vice president of guest experience, will join us, and he wants your feedback. How you think it went last Saturday at Ralph Wilson Stadium? What would you like to see better this game and moving into the future in the new and improved Ralph Wilson Stadium? Andy Major, live in studio with us at 8:30 tonight. Talking to folks about the Bills' roster makeup, what it's going to look like after the cutdown day, and what do you think the big battles are going into this final preseason game? Give us a call, 803-0550, the number. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Brad tweets in, which Bills are on the bubble? Which Bills need a good performance? All of them already smashing remotes, and it's only the preseason. Smashing remotes. That's where Bills fans, some of them, are at. What about leadership on this roster? Head coach Doug Marrone says, as far as he can tell, the team is progressing when it comes to identifying leaders. He says he's already seen it in this preseason.
I've seen more things that are good signs this year than I did from when I first arrived. So, you know, you're seeing, you know, the players getting together. You're seeing them, you know, holding each other more accountable. And I think they realize, and I do. And I, you know, I think they realize that, hey, you know, we're closer than we were before. You know, some of the performances that we've had, obviously we're not happy with. We do have the ability to change it, but it's a lot of attention to detail. It's a lot of discipline. It's a lot of structure. And I think that we have more players that are starting to get it now than we did before.
Well, that's progress, right? And obviously the progress has not come as quickly as many people had hoped, but I do think the coach is indicating that there is progress there when it comes to identifying leadership on the roster. First of all, they've got to identify the 53-man roster and figure out who's going to play. And there are a lot of, I think, interesting decisions to be made. Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner, he was on the air with us last night. We got talking last night, I don't know if you heard it, 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:20 last night, about this fifth and final preseason game, the last preseason game, traditionally the game in which the starters will play the least. And, you know, people kind of throw up their hands and say this game is a waste. Well, if to many people it is. I get that. You're not looking at the first-line players for probably three-quarters of this game tomorrow night. What you are going to watch, though, is the highest level of professional football in the world, number one. You're going to watch guys fighting tooth and nail to win a job at the highest level of professional football, whether it's on the Buffalo roster, the Detroit roster, or putting something on tape to get them on somebody else's roster. I think there's value in that. And I think we talked about this with Mark last night. In some ways, I feel like we should respect that tomorrow night, the effort that's going into it for some of these guys who are in difficult spots. You know, would you want to be, for instance, would you want to be the punter the Bills just signed yesterday, Jordan Gay, just cut by Carolina the other day, punter, kickoff specialist, brought in here, signed here to compete probably on the one-game basis. Now, how many kicks is he going to get tomorrow? How many kickoffs? How many punts is he going to get? We don't know the answer to that question, but every kick, every punt that he has tomorrow, there's a lot riding on it. His future, for example, that's a lot of pressure. You could say to a lesser extent, maybe Brian Moorman, who's already demonstrated that he's done it in the NFL, but there's pressure on him to perform. How would you like to be one of those wide receivers who have to be wondering tonight when their head hits the pillow where they're going to be in a couple of days? Caleb Holly, who's had a pretty good camp, the Alaska native. Naaman Roosevelt, who's played in this league before. T.J. Graham, who's obviously played in the league and played for the Bills and been contributing before. And I think, as I said earlier on in the hour, has really done a good job of competing during this training camp. Does he have an uphill battle for a roster spot? He may, but you got to salute the effort that's gone into it over the last 5 or 6 weeks. How'd you like to be one of those guys? How'd you like to be one of the offensive linemen, even the veterans on the roster? You know, Doug Legursky, say. Somebody like Doug Legursky or Craig Urbick. You know, there are young guys pushing him. The three draft picks, Chantrell Henderson, Cyril Richardson, namely. Cyrus Kwanjo is a second-round pick, likely to have a roster spot. So there's pressure there, and I think you should respect the effort and what's at stake for some of these players. And that goes on all sides of the ball. The receivers, we talked about the battle between Robert Woods and Chris Hogan for the slot receiver. You know, if Hogan is not the starting slot receiver in the eyes of the coaching staff, is he on the roster? Who knows? I don't know if we know that. I think they like what Hogan's done. I think we all appreciate what he's done, but nothing is guaranteed, and nobody would tell you that more than Chris Hogan, I would surmise, because he's been through this game before. He's bounced around a little bit in the league. So there are guys playing tomorrow night against Detroit and guys playing for Detroit tomorrow night who are in the battle for their lives, their professional football lives tomorrow. Backup defensive lineman, Jaquie Smith. Does he have a roster spot locked down? Landon Cohen, even with the spectacular plays that he has made, does he have a roster spot locked down? I'm sure that's something that's going through his head a little bit tonight. Xavius Boyd, backup linebacker. Ty Powell always gets rave reviews from the coaching staff. You would think he would be safe, but who's really safe here? There's a group of young cornerbacks, defensive backs. Bobby Felder, not expected to play. Mario Butler, not expected to play, but Kamel McElwain, Dion Broomfield, Sam Miller just picked up a week or so ago, Kenny Ladler. That's a whole group of guys who really need a good performance in this game in order to lock down a roster spot. And so for that reason, I mean, again, if you demand excellence and you only want to watch the very best, then probably stay away from that game tomorrow night. You know, you probably don't want to invest much time or effort into that game. But if you're intrigued about what goes into a roster and what goes into decisions affecting the roster, games like tomorrow night's go a long way. I sat down today with the head coach and did the pregame interview that will air about 30 minutes before kickoff tomorrow and asked him about that. How much is at stake in this game for those fringe roster guys, and how much is hanging in the balance as far as the coaching staff is concerned on those roster decisions? And he said you'd be surprised. Quite a bit of what we do in these final cuts depend on what goes on in this final preseason game. He says fans, media would be surprised. A lot of people want to walk away from this last preseason game and write it off as a meaningless exercise and just a filler. And I'm not going to tell you it will be an artistic masterpiece tomorrow. It is likely not to be, because you're going to have a lot of guys who have not played together much. However, there's a lot riding on it for these guys down the roster and people trying to win a roster spot on the Bills and the Detroit Lions. So I look forward to this game. I look forward to the end of preseason. It's been a long preseason, but I do look forward to this game and watching the effort and watching guys who give it their all. I mean, there are guys who are going to leave it all on the field tomorrow night right across the parking lot here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. And for that, from my perspective, I salute them and I respect them and look forward to watching it happen tomorrow night. All right, we'll take a break. And at the top of the hour, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about making up a 53-man roster. Greg Gabriel, a Buffalo native, former Bills scout, longtime New York Giants scout, and a longtime personnel man with the Chicago Bears, now writes the director's report for the National Football Post. Greg Gabriel, a frequent guest on our show, has written an interesting post called Making the 53-Man Roster, some of the considerations that go into the 53-man roster. Greg Gabriel standing by to join us after the top of the hour. At the bottom of the hour, next hour, we'll talk with Andy Major, the Buffalo Bills Vice President of Guest Experience, about what went on here at Ralph Wilson Stadium last Saturday, what went well, what they'd like to improve on, and maybe get some of your thoughts on that as well. That's coming up next hour. An hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin! Let's go! Let's go!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
You ready for me to get started?
I'm ready to bite.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're having phone issues, so if you're trying to dial in and you'd like to weigh in on some of the questions we've talked about, sit tight for a while. The phone's apparently not working. We'll try to make that work for you. In the meantime, coming up this hour, we're going to talk with Andy Major. He is the Buffalo Bills Vice President of Guest Experience. We'll talk with him about the guest experience from last Saturday, the Bills-Bucks game, the opener at the newly renovated Ralph Wilson Stadium. And hopefully we'll be able to get some phone calls up for Andy at that time. Also coming up this hour, we're going to talk right now with a gentleman who's a frequent guest on the show for good reason. He spent 29 years in the National Football League as a personnel executive, starting with the Buffalo Bills way back in 1981. He spent 16 years in personnel with the New York Giants and 9 years with the Chicago Bears, most of that time as the Bears Director of College Scouting. He is a columnist for the National Football Post. He writes the Director's Report for National Football Post. Buffalo native Greg Gabriel joins us live right now. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Murph. How you been?
I've been okay. We are really at the crunch time of preseason with the cutdowns coming. We're right between the cutdowns. And you wrote in a post just last week how this is a fascinating time of the year, always a fascinating time. What's so fascinating about the makeup of these rosters, Greg?
Well, it's how you go about making the final 53. Different teams do it different ways. There's some game playing done. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that young players who were cut just in the last couple days will end up on practice squads. One of the reasons being is, the thought is, well, if they got cut at 75, how good could they be? Well, some teams want to slip guys through that way. It's just part of the gamesmanship. And then you've got, situations where, what's your final makeup going to be? How many receivers are you going to have? How many linebackers? How many running backs, et cetera? How many quarterbacks are you going to keep? And, and then special teams plays into that. So that becomes part of the process. You could have a running back. Let's say you're going to keep three running backs, and your third best running back isn't a good special teams player. Well, the next back, who may be a real good special teams player, may make the squad over the third best running back because, he could be a core special teams player.
Had you been in that room, obviously, with the Giants and the Bears over the years, Greg? Do those become fights, like arguments anyway, between coaches and personnel people and even special teams coaches who, maybe bang the table and say, I need that guy for our teams?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I've seen it happen a few times, but generally speaking, the process, you go into camp thinking who your 53 is going to be, on paper. And it obviously doesn't always work that way because you're going to have a few players that excel at camp that you weren't really expecting to excel as much as they did. Or on the other side, you could have a veteran who you were expecting to still get a productive year out of really slips off and say, I don't think we can get anything out of him. He may get hurt during the year. His production has dropped off. His athleticism has dropped off or for whatever reason. So there's always going to be a difference in the squad from how you go into camp and how you come out of camp. And it might be as many as five or six players, but generally I think, if you wrote 45 names down on the first day of camp, those 45 are going to be on the roster at the final 53. It's those last, say, eight names that could change and fluctuate.
How much variance is there from team to team in the league, Greg, as far as who makes the call and how much authority the head coach has compared to the GM and maybe other decision makers?
Well, that's a great question, and there's really only one person on each club that has final say on the 53-man roster. Generally speaking, it's either the general manager or the head coach, and it's in his contract. And in essence, and I put this in the article in the NFP, is that that guy is really the boss. We go back to, and when I started off in Buffalo part-time and Chuck Knox was the head coach. Well, Chuck Knox was the boss. He was the head coach. The general manager had final say on all football decisions. And, whatever he said was going to be the makeup of the final roster, that's what it was. And then, Bill Belichick in New England has final say. But then in a lot of clubs, it's the general manager. There can be disagreement. But generally speaking, if you have a good relationship between the head coach and the general manager, there may end up being disagreement only about a few players, and a lot of it is, are you going to keep a veteran over a young player or vice versa? Because, the general manager is always looking into the future. I had one guy, just to use a phrase, one general manager told me a while ago, he goes, you know what the definition of a general manager is? I said, no, what? He goes, it's to save the club from the head coach. It's because, you know, the general manager has to have, you know, look far out and really look at the outlook of the club year after year after year, and a coach has to win every year, so he's got tunnel vision.
And I guess it doesn't. There's no one way to do it right. I mean, Bill Parcells famously said, you know, he wanted to shop for the groceries. Is that the best way to structure it, that the coach would have final authority over the roster? What's been your experience in that?
You know, really, I think it depends on the experience of the coach and how long he's been in the league. You know, you get a young coach who has total control, and he's not, you know, as great as, say, an evaluator as some of the personnel people. And, you know, he could make some decisions that turn out not to be the right decision. You're not going to know that until, say, weeks into the season. But I know, you know, generally speaking, you know, when you're talking, say, about offensive linemen and stuff, you know, the coaches want to keep the experienced guy because they trust him. He knows his assignments. Where the young guy, they don't know if they have to throw him into the fire, if he's going to, you know, make the right decision on every down. And obviously, a broken assignment can lead to an injury or a big loss on a play. So, but coaches always want to go with experience, when, especially along the line when you get down with this cut-down time.
Live on the line with Greg Gabriel, three decades of experience in NFL personnel decision-making with the Bills, the Giants, the Bears. He's director of college scouting for Chicago for 9 years. He's a columnist for National Football Post, and one of his recent columns, The Making of the 53-Man Roster. We're in a discussion here in Buffalo, Greg, about second and backup quarterbacks, and you write that the days of three quarterbacks on the roster being the standard may be falling by the boards.
Yeah, and I think this year it might be changing again, just looking at how some teams are doing it. And it really depends on who your three are. If your third quarterback is a young guy and you think you can slip him through waivers and he's got practice eligibility, then, you know, obviously that's what you're going to do, and you're going to have your third man on the practice squad because, you know, theoretically he's not going to play anyway. So what difference does it make if he's on the practice squad or on the active roster? The difference is really to him as far as getting an accrued season and his paycheck. But to the team, it makes a difference because he's not going to play. But if you've got a young quarterback that, you had a draft, say, in the first four or five rounds, and other teams like that player, well, then you're taking a big chance trying to waive him because chances are he will get claimed.
Because everybody wants a young developmental quarterback, right? Some teams
true, and that's why some guys, you know, they don't play some of these guys during the preseason, with the thought being that, well, if we don't play him, people aren't going to think he's any good, and then we can, you know, we can slip him through waivers and put him on the practice squad. But far too often, you see, a lot of teams, they get into this process, they go back, they don't necessarily go on what they saw on tape during the preseason. They go with what they saw in college, and they'll use the college reports on rookies. And if you like the guy going into the draft, you should like him 4 months later after, you know, the cutdown process.
So I'm sure teams are different, but in your experience, Greg, hello, Greg, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that. We had a little hit on the phone line. In your experience, how important are preseason games when it comes to making these roster decisions? A lot of times we as fans and observers think they mean everything. You're telling me not necessarily, huh?
No, I think it's part of the equation, not the total equation, because, you know, there's practice every day, and what you do in practice, what you do in the classroom, that counts, and that counts sometimes even more than what happens in games, because you can't control what happens in a game time situation. And, you know, let's say, you know, you go into a preseason game and you want to get somebody 15 snaps, but because of the flow of the game, you just can't do that, so you're not able to evaluate him in that situation, but you have been able to evaluate him every day in camp. And on top of that, you know what he's doing in the classroom. You know how he picks up your offense or your defense. You know what his work habits are. You've worked with him every day. So, you know, it's really a two-part equation. I'm going to say it's more practice than the preseason games. The preseason games are, you know, you don't have as much hitting anymore in camps the way we used to have it 10, 12, 15 years ago. So I think that's really to get people acclimated to hitting more than anything else.
Well, you know, we've seen Hard Knocks on HBO. Many of us have. We've seen those personnel meetings where the assistant coaches are asked for their opinions. Do teams ever just totally override what the assistant coach thinks? And how do they handle that afterwards? I mean, how does an assistant coach feel when he's sat at these meetings and say, this guy is not going to help us, and then they cut to 53 and that guy's on the roster? What do they do then?
No, you've got to listen to the coach, because obviously he has worked with the player and he knows the player as well as anybody, at least in your situation, since he's been with your club. And you can't, I've learned over the years that it's really difficult to try to say, shove a player down a coach's throat and say, we're going to keep this guy and you got to coach him. Just not going to work. The coach is going to find ways for the player not to succeed. I'm not saying that he's going to go out of his way to do that. He just doesn't, he's not motivated. You want to have the coach to be motivated to work with the player and coach the player. And generally speaking, that's why, go back to the draft process. When you send the coaches out to work out players, part of that process is getting the coach to learn about the player and want to work with that player. There's a motivation on both sides. So, generally speaking, if you draft the player the coach wants, that's going to carry over into the preseason and down to cutoff time.
Hey, Greg, so practically speaking, the Bills and most of the NFL teams are playing tomorrow night, and the cutdown is Saturday. So practically speaking, what will happen on Friday? The coaching staff meets first to talk about this, or is it an entire coaching staff personnel meeting on most teams?
Well, there's going to be personnel meetings, but there's going to be decisions made right now. There's been decisions made right now on certain players. And, you got 22 players to cut. Sometimes you're going to cut more than that because you want to have waiver acquisitions or a trade acquisition or whatever. So, a lot of times you may cut half the players Friday morning, and especially if you're playing at home. Bills are playing at home. They may end up, cutting 10 or 12 guys Friday morning and then finish the cut process on Saturday. And a lot of teams will do that across the league. The guys, and there's going to be guys that you want to cut, and you want to cut. You're not going to play them in the game tomorrow night because you don't want them to get hurt. You don't want to take the chance of them getting hurt.
What about the breakdowns at each position? We've talked a lot about that on the show in recent days, in particular how it applies to the Bills' wide receivers. Some of us think the Bills could and maybe should keep as many as six. My partner on the broadcast, Mark Kelso, is saying they should keep seven, which seems awfully high to me. But who makes that call, and how do they balance out those sort of considerations?
Well, that's obviously, that's all part of the process, and some of those decisions have already been made. Put it this way, the roster's 53, but in essence it's 50 because you got three special teams players, you got your two kickers and your snapper. So now you got to divide up the roster spots by 50 players, and scheme has something to do with it. Whether you have a 4-3 scheme or a 3-4 scheme as far as defense, that's going to change your allotment of defensive linemen and linebackers. And some of the linebackers, say if you got a 3-4 scheme like Buffalo ran last year, then you may keep some people that are like combo guys who can play outside linebacker and play down in a pass rush situation. So that comes into play. A lot of deep 4-3 teams may keep as many as eight defensive linemen, but if it's a 3-4 team, maybe the max is seven or six, depending on the club. And the same goes with wide receivers. You got a head coach who's an offensive-minded head coach. He may opt to keep six or seven wide receivers. I think a lot of teams keep six. But when you do that, your fourth, fifth, and sixth players, they've got to be, or at least two of those guys, got to be core special teams players, because that's just part of the roster makeup. And special teams always plays an important role in the final roster makeup.
And, Greg, how big a role does money play, salary play, in the final roster makeup?
I think it depends on your salary cap, really. I read, and I don't know how true it is, that New England asked Logan Mankins yesterday to take a pay cut, and then when he didn't take a pay cut, they shipped him off to Tampa Bay. But Belichick has a history of trading players before their time is due, so to speak. He trades them a year earlier, not a year late, and then he gets value for them, and he keeps accumulating these high draft picks. And he's had a very successful tenure at New England because of that. I mean, Buffalo had one of his players years ago, Ty Law, the defensive back. And, so these type of things you see happen all the time. And if you're got a solid salary cap situation and you have plenty of room under the cap, then I don't think the salary really going to play into it that much. But if you're tied up against the cap, because you got to have some room to maneuver during the season. You got to have, you know, there's going to be injuries. You're going to have money to go out and sign players if there is injuries. And you know, generally you want, say, you know, $2.5, $3, or $4 million available for that purpose. And so if you're going to be tight, if you're sitting right now and you're only $1.5 million under the cap, well, then you may have to have some guys take a haircut if they want to stay on the team.
We're live with Greg Gabriel, columnist for the National Football Post, longtime personnel man for the Giants and the Chicago Bears. We talk about setting the roster at 53, got to be done by 4 o'clock on Saturday. But from recent experience here in Buffalo last year, for instance, and even around the league, these rosters are almost in a constant state of flux. And what the roster looks like Saturday at 4 p.m. this Saturday, it might look a little bit differently 7 days after that going into the first game, right?
Yeah, I think generally speaking you have more roster moves in the first 2 weeks than in any other time during the season. And it's people just setting the roster. Part of it is with veteran players, so to speak. There's going to be veterans out there. If he's a vested vet and he's on the roster for the very, you know, for the opening game, his pay is guaranteed for the season, and that counts against your cap. So if you cut him at the 53-man cut down and then bring him back after game one, now he's being paid on a per-game basis. He may be making the same salary, but you're not going to be hit with the entire year's salary, you know, just as long as you keep them. So you'll see a lot of veterans who are cut this Saturday being back on rosters a week from now,
yeah,
10 days from now.
You know, the Hall of Fame coach here, Marv Levy, used to say, and this is, you know, I'm showing my age here, but he said it 20, 25, almost 30 years ago, you go to training camp with your team. The more I think about it, and when I think about these cutdown dates looming, I don't think that's the case anymore, especially at the back end of the roster. What do you think?
Well, I can agree with that. That's, you're always looking to better your roster, and if somebody else has a player that can't make their club and you think can help you, then you put in a claim or you try to sign him as a free agent when he's on the street. I mean, and it really goes back to how good your scouting department is, and this I mean your pro scouting department, because they're evaluating the pro tape of these guys on a daily basis, and you're always looking to find somebody that's a little better than the guy you have on the bottom end of each position.
And continuity be damned? You don't worry about continuity or knowing the system in that case?
Well, part of it is what kind of system has he played in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a vet who's played 7, 8, 9 years in the league, it's not going to be hard for him to pick up different systems. There's not a big difference. It's terminology. You know, basically everybody runs the same play. There's different terminologies. Obviously, scheme, it's different. And then, you know, if you're running a 3-4 or 4-3 on defense, because then you're looking at different types of linemen to play in your front seven position. But other than that, a lot of the things are the same. And if the guy's smart enough, he should have no problem picking up your scheme.
Hey, Greg, in your almost 30 years in the personnel world of the NFL, and you don't have to use names, but can you recall any cut-down day scenarios that were particularly memorable? Maybe, you know, when you squeezed a guy through waivers and were able to sign him back to the practice squad, or you know, anything like that happened with either the Bears or the Giants that you might want to share with us?
Well, you know, there's some thing. I know there's players, and this is when I was, you know, with both the Giants and the Bears, where, you know, there's guys going back to the draft. There's guys you liked, and for whatever reason, either they signed with another club as a free agent or were drafted in the lower rounds, and you watch those players. We used to have this saying, say, I want to be the guy to cut them. So, and if you're watching them during preseason and you think that he may not fit onto their 53-man roster, and you're anticipating that he's going to get cut, you know, you may start lobbying the agent a little bit and say, hey, you know, if he gets cut, this may be a good situation for him. And that's worked to our advantage in the past, where we've been able to put guys on the practice squad that got cut, and then turned out, you know, a year later they turn out to make the squad. So I'll put it that way, and I wouldn't want to say any more about it.
I'm confused. What do you mean, I want to be the guy that cut him, though? What does that mean?
Well, in other words, you like the guy. I mean, there was a deep, this goes back years ago, and it was when I was where Chicago, there's a defensive lineman. He was a Canadian kid from Michigan, or went to Michigan, and you know, he grew up in Canada. Very, very athletic kid, and you know, he just played in spurts and had flashes of Michigan. He was a free agent for some club, didn't make it. He got cut. We brought him in, and we just said, you know, I want to cut him. You know, if he can't make it, I want to be the guy to figure out that he can't make it. So it's just that, you know, you're enamored with his traits, and you just want to see, well, the other team may have screwed up. They didn't see the traits the way we saw the traits, and we want to be able to work with them and see if we can make something out of
that. Makes sense. Hey, Greg, I know on National Football Post you've been doing rookie reports for several teams. You got the Rams report up today. Have you done one on the Bills rookies yet, or is that coming down the pike a little bit?
I've been waiting for Watkins to play.
Yeah. So. Well, I think tomorrow he's going to play a little bit.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, I think he had one catch in the opening game, and he hasn't had anything since, and he got dinged up. So I'm really waiting for him to play. I was looking for some, like, I watched the game last week hoping that he would play last week, because then I could have had an Evans versus Watkins comparison.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. So, you know, I'll just see what happens going into the first part of the season or tomorrow in tomorrow's game. But I wouldn't expect them to play him too much tomorrow, because they don't want him to get hurt.
Right. I think he'll play a little, but not much. Do you have any thoughts on what you've seen of the Bills so far in four preseason games, Greg?
You know, I think the offense is struggling. The defense is obviously really strong. Manuel's been up and down so far in the preseason. And granted, you know, you try to show as little as you can during the preseason, and it's not what you're showing in preseason and what they're going to show against Chicago in the opener are two different things. But I think that has to be a concern. Their quarterback situation hasn't been good. I think other than that, they've got a pretty good, you know, they've got a good lineup on offense, but it revolves around the quarterback, and if he doesn't play good, then, you know, they're going to be out to lunch. But on defense, they're going to be a tough team to score against.
Yep, sounds fair. Greg, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight. Love your work on National Football Post. I would encourage any football fan who's interested in how these roster decisions are made to go to National Football Post and look at your post. It's August 17th, the making of the 53-man roster. I found it fascinating, Greg. Thanks very much for being on. You going to go to the game in Chicago, the Bills and Bears opener?
My kids are. I'm not.
Okay.
I got to, you know, actually I'm writing for one of the radio stations in town, and I got to do a five up and five down type column, and so if I go to the game I won't be able to do that, so I got to sit and watch it and then get the column posted on the radio station's website.
Gotcha. Your kids Bills fans or Bears fans?
Bills fans. They still live in Bucks. I can't get them to move.
Nobody wants to. Hey, Greg, thanks. Great talking with you. Thank you very much for your insight tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot, John.
Greg Gabriel, longtime personnel man in the National Football League with all those years with the Giants and the Bears. Started out with Chuck Knox here in Buffalo back in 1981 in the scouting department here. Now he writes for the National Football Post, a columnist there. You can catch them at nationalfootballpost.com. And his director's report, about a week old, the making of the 53-man roster, some fascinating stuff about the process, how decisions are made over these next few days. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be with Andy Major live in studio with us. He's the Buffalo Bills Vice President of Guest Experience. Having phone line problems right now, so if you have a question for Andy, use Twitter. Go to Twitter at John Murphy Show if you have questions or comments about last weekend's Saturday's first game at the renovated Ralph Wilson Stadium and what you'd like to see happen. Go to Twitter. That's the only way we can communicate, I believe, with our listeners. As Jay, right?
We're working on it.
Working
and
on
hope,
it.
We hope to have something.
Efforting.
We hope to have something. Hopefully for when Andy gets on the show. Here.
It'd be a shame if Andy wasn't able to take calls.
I'm sure a lot of the fans have a lot of questions.
Yeah. So go to Twitter. Go to @JohnMurphyShow. Your comments and questions about the opener at Ralph Wilson Stadium last week and how you'd like to see it play out, what you'd like to see change maybe in the newly renovated stadium. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Greg Gabriel from National Football Post. I kept him for a long time on the air talking, but I think it's fascinating, the makeup of the 53-man roster. So I said, I can't, probably a half dozen times already this week, head coach Doug Marrone here at One Bills Drive has mentioned how he and Doug Whaley are talking 3 and 4 and 6 times a day about the makeup of the roster. They've got some important decisions to make by 4 o'clock on Saturday with the game coming up again tomorrow night. 7 o'clock game, 7 o'clock kickoff, the Bills and the Lions with our pregame coverage on many of these stations starting at 4 p.m. Second game in the newly renovated Ralph Wilson Stadium. How did the first one go? What did you think? Well, joining us in studio is the Buffalo Bills Vice President of Operations and Guest Experience, a frequent guest on the show, Andy Major. Andy, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We want to tell people, again, the phone lines are down, and which drives me crazy because I know how much you like taking fan phone calls. But if you have access to Twitter, if you have a question for Andy, you can tweet it in at John Murphy Show, and we'll read it on the air. But overall, Andy, how did it go last week? What did you think?
You know, overall, we thought it went really well. You know, we wish we were 100% done with the construction project, and we weren't. But fans really seemed to have a great time. It was kids' day, a lot of kids, a lot of families. And we got a lot of great feedback, and we got some positive, some constructive feedback as well from fans.
I made a point of walking around. I'm sure you did, too. I think I saw you walking around. When the gates opened, everybody walked in, and within 10 minutes, people had big smiles on their faces. First of all, it helps when the weather's that great, but I think people like the look of the place.
You know, what was kind of neat was there were so many fans that came in really early.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the operations guys, we love that. You know, when fans come in early, it just helps the later crowd get in even earlier, get in even easier later. So, yeah, we had thousands of fans waiting to get in, excited to get in, standing at the gate entry. And it was cool to see them come through and, you know, their eyes open wide, looking at the new signage, looking at the new space, looking at the new concessions, the new team store. I think that was probably our number one positive feedback from fans was a new team store.
Really?
If there was one, like, real wow factor, is walking in that store and seeing the space and seeing the product and all the graphics. I mean, that was a pretty cool wow factor for fans, we thought.
The team store right on Abbott Road, it's a great location for that, too. I mean, just right next to, adjacent to the stadium the way it is.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, we're talking with the merchandise guys in the office. You know, this is almost like, you know, the local sports stores and merchandise stores around the town because there's so many fans coming and just stopping by.
Yeah.
Because they're driving by and they see it. It's visible. It's part of the building. And it's part of the look of the new stadium, so it's a great asset for the Bills.
As far as the team store on Abbott Road on game days, I know you talked about this last week, but tell us how it works. You open it for a while, then you shut the gate and do it the other way, right?
It's certainly open in the morning, and it's open all day, and then right around an hour before kickoff, the crew in the store kind of switches it over so fans from the inside that have already entered the building can now go inside the store, and then fans from the outside can't come in the front of the store, but they can come in through the gates and into the store from the interior concourse. First game, it worked out really well.
We're live in our studio with Andy Major, the Bills Vice President of Operations and Guest Experience, and the phone line's not working, but if you'd like to tweet in a comment or a question, you can do it at John Murphy Show. Question here from, I had it here in a second. Where is it? Kenneth Kujawa. Wasn't sure if I was at a concert or a football game. Why do you feel the need to blow out our eardrums after every play?
He's right.
Really?
I mean, there were definitely a few areas, and our marketing crew and our scoreboard operations team, they work really hard on this, and they want to get it right. But it does take fan feedback sometimes on the sound because, you know, the sound is a distributed system. The whole stadium is reviewed. Different areas are all reviewed. So knowing which areas of the stadium might be louder than others is very, very helpful for them. And we just share all that feedback from our staff and from our fans. So that's a good comment, and we definitely are looking into it. We're not trying to blow everybody's eardrums out. We want it to be loud enough where everybody can enjoy it. But not too loud, of course.
Seems like it's always been a challenge to get the audio just right in there. And I always figured it's because of the vastness of the space, right?
It is. And it's such a great sound system. You know, it's one of the best, if not the best quality system you can have. So, you know, it's just a balancing act with what's, you know, loud and what's not loud and what's comfortable for the fans. So it's something we're working on, and we'll get it right.
More comments on Twitter for Andy Major, who's the Vice President of Operations and Guest Experience for the Bills. Wes Chisson tweets in, much shorter concession lines, easier to get a beer. Overall, was pretty pleased. That was big for you, getting the concession lines moving quicker, right?
It certainly was. I mean, with the new point-of-sale system, with all the new concession areas, more staff working in those areas, yes, I think that was definitely a noticeable thing. And we thought that it worked really well. The lines were short, and we had a lot of people going to those lines because there were great deals for Kids Day. You know, it was dollar hot dogs, and the drinks were cheaper. And, you know, so we had a lot of action, which was a great test for us for the home opener against the Dolphins. So, yeah, that worked really well.
Here's a question tweeted in by Kevin Duran. Question, what have the Bills done to make going to a game better for my family? I don't like the fights and drunks.
Wow, that, you know, and that is not a planted message, is it, Murph?
I mean, no.
I love that call, that question on Twitter.
I don't plant questions.
I don't want to, you know, come across like that was. It sounds too good to be true.
Really,
that's our main focus. So that is a great comment, and yeah, we're doing everything we possibly can to make it better for families and kids and friends to come to games. You know, that's one of the reasons we had 128 uniformed sheriff as part of our new lease agreement, in addition to all the security personnel we've had over the years. So we didn't reduce staffing on security, we added. And we've seen the numbers go down. Our arrest numbers have gone down, our ejection numbers have gone down, the fan behavior incidents, the negative incidents have gone down drastically. And, you know, it's a true credit to all the team members, all of our partners at Work Game Day. You know, everybody takes this to heart because we all work here, but we all have families that come to the games as well, and they experience that negative, sometimes that negative issue as well. So, you know, we're very, very invested in making it better for our fans. We want responsible fans at our games. They can tailgate, they can have fun, they can have a couple drinks, but just do so responsibly. Enjoy the game and behave well, and it'll be fun for everybody.
Here's a question tweeted in by Chad Smith. Love the new stair setup. I assume he means a monumental staircase, but was wondering why the parking lots across Abbott Road never get paved.
Good question, and great comment, and that is in our future plans, is to get those lots paved. So, you know, right, if they saw the construction project this year, those lots were actually used for our construction. A lot of the construction materials, a lot of the heavy equipment was kind of stored across the street because it really is very damaging to the lots. So we had that across the street where those lots weren't paved, really to save a lot of the interior lots that are already taken care of with pavement. And then knowing we're trying to eventually pave the lots across the street, get through the construction project, plan for the future on paving those lots, and you know, eventually we will have those lots paved.
And so, another tweeted
comment.
I think this is on the level. Mr. K. France tweets, were hot dogs really a dollar? Because I paid two.
Well, you know what? You know, there were some that were, I think, depending on the size as well. So I think they have some larger ones, the footlongs, and then some, I guess you call regular size hot dogs.
Okay. You got all the answers. I'm impressed.
Well, I thought
that was a joke question, but I guess not.
Wheelhouse
Marine. Concession lines still cross the hall in our section. Can condiments be moved to help?
You know, I wonder where he's talking about, but if he's talking about potentially the west end zone area, which is the new open area when you come in through the team store, gate 4, gate 5, that huge expanded area, there's a ton of space out there, and there's a lot of portable concession stands out in this new space. What we saw happen at this first game was fans kind of congregated around only two concession areas, not maybe realizing there's all these new ones and other areas up in this new gathering area for fans. So if he's talking about that area, I can see that, and that might have been what he experienced. But the condiment areas, yeah, we're looking at, with our partner Delaware North companies, to expand and maybe add some additional shelving space for condiments.
What did you do during the game last Saturday? Did you just lap the stadium over and over and over again, looking around, taking
notes? You know,
Murph,
we had a post-game recap meeting, which we do after every game, which is all of our partners, everybody that works the building is a part of this meeting. And we get all their feedback that they heard from fans, that they heard from their staff. We take this, we bring it all together. And that's what I mentioned in that meeting was, this was the first game I can ever remember in my career that I've received so much feedback, positive, constructive, what have you, because there's so much still to finish before the regular season, and we're going to get there. But yeah, we receive. That's what I was doing on game day, is walking the building, listening to phone calls, answering questions, taking notes, putting the notes in my iPad, and downloading everything back into the office so we could be prepared for post-game meetings.
Andy Major, our guest, Vice President of Operations and Guest Experience for the Bills. One of the issues that maybe fans don't think about much is security. And I know you got some pretty good feedback from the NFL about the security perimeter in the new stadium setup. Huh?
You know, that was nice to hear. I mean, if when the fans come that haven't been to our games, see all the rocks that surround our facility that not only look so much better than what we had in the past, but also provide an actual security perimeter that we're required to have with the NFL. So, yeah, we did get some comments from the NFL folks that were on site, and they basically said, boy, you have the best security perimeter in the entire NFL. This is unbelievable what you guys have done with your construction partners.
Because of those big boulders?
A lot of it was attributed to the big boulders. A lot of it was attributed to how we have the layout of the gates and where we have the gates located now, further away from the building. So there's a lot of factors involved, but it was nice to hear that is going to work out well for us in the NFL.
The game was last Saturday afternoon. There's another game tomorrow night, and you have not been standing pat. I hear the construction workers and see them every day. There's still a lot of work going on over there. What are they still working on, and what's going to be new this week?
Yeah, you know, I think what the fans, if they went to the first game and they're coming tomorrow night as well, they're going to see a lot more signage up. A lot more of the fun stuff is starting to go up. You know, the player photos, the player history, the alumni photos, you know, some of those graphics around the building, and then some of the gate structures and the gate signage. So, you know, again, we were ready to play last Saturday.
Right.
But a lot of it was temporary signage, you know, and I think a lot of our fans and some of our partners noticed all that. And, you know, we're working hard to get that done.
You get feedback a lot, as you said, on game day. You also encourage fans to participate with you're going to have like an online survey coming up in this regular season, right?
Yeah, we're working with our marketing team. You know, as everybody hopefully realizes, the Buffalo Bills and especially my department, we are very, very interested in the feedback from fans. I mean, you know, this whole construction project is basically that. It's the fans, what they wanted and what they needed. So, yeah, this is going to be an online survey for fans. And we're working with our marketing team on setting it up, and they'll be able to go online, answer a few questions, share some positive and some constructive criticism about their game day experience for each game throughout the course of the season.
A couple of more little feedback here via Twitter. Jason Krantz tweets in, the first down bell is totally obnoxious. Is that your department?
You know, I have to be – no, that's not my department.
That's game presentation.
But I will share that with our friends in in broadcasting, marketing, and scoreboard. But, no, actually, I didn't have time to hear that during the game. I wish I could have watched more of the game.
Similar question from Greg. What happened to full-screen replays on the main scoreboard? Video is the same size, just more ads, he says. And in the interest of full disclosure, I don't know these things because I'm kind of locked into my own thing.
Yeah,
I don't watch this scoreboard. I don't really hear the first down bell.
He may have already shared that comment with our guest services team because that was one of the comments that came out of our meeting. And we have already shared that with our scoreboard team and with our business development team. And, you know, the funny thing is it may have seemed that way to the fan. But there is actually less content and more replay and larger replay. But it's a good comment, and we want to hear that kind of stuff from the fans. And it's something we're going to keep looking at on how we integrate replays on the scoreboard, sponsorship signage and advertisements on the scoreboard. It's a huge board, and we're able to do some of those things all together. But yeah, we appreciate those comments on what the fans are seeing out there.
You mentioned about the online survey program starting up in the regular season. Your fan advisory board still is going to get together, right, and talk about some of these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. We plan to meet with them again after the second regular season game.
Okay.
So what we thought would be great, and I think we've talked to them here and there through our ticket office and our customer service department, let them experience a few games. You know, we've talked so much about everything we're going to do and everything that is happening, and they've seen the construction. They know what we're planning. They've been to a couple, will have been to a couple of preseason games, and then now they're going to go to two regular season games that are going to be completely sold out, 70,000-plus, you know, screaming loyal Bills fans having a great time. And then let's get that discussion going again with that fan advisory board after they've had basically four home games under their belts.
Last Saturday during the broadcast, we had Scott Radisek from Populous on part of the third quarter, fourth quarter. He called last Saturday kind of a soft grand opening. And it's important to note that you're still working some things in here, right? I mean, this is a work in progress.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, definitely a soft grand opening. I mean, I personally was putting some signs up myself during the game. So, okay. You know, a couple of areas we actually did miss. Yes, it's definitely a soft opening. But the grand blowout opening is, you know, against the Miami Dolphins at the home opener. So we'll be ready for that one. And I know everyone in the office is really looking forward to that.
Looking forward to having you in here before that game, and we'll discuss some of these issues again.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we try to have as many avenues open for the fans to contact us, to let us know what they're thinking. Unfortunately, the phones are shut off tonight. Right. I'd love to hear what fans are saying and talking about. But, you know, we do. We talk to them every day, especially on Monday, Tuesdays after the games. We talk to them during the games. They're more than welcome to visit our guest services booths on game day and share, you know, some thoughts there, too. So, we do appreciate the comments and the if it's criticism, great. We'll take it and we'll run with it and we'll do the best we can to make it better.
Thanks for coming in, Andy.
Anytime.
Andy
Thanks
Major,
for having me.
Andy Major, the Vice President of Operations and Guest Services for the Buffalo Bills. He'll be in a couple weeks before the home opener against the Dolphins. A few minutes left here in the show. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
I think we're down to just a minute or two left here on the show, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Again, apologize that the phone lines were not able to work, but we did get in some tweeted questions for Andy Major. We're going to try to get Andy on before every home game during the regular season now moving forward. That'll be before the Dolphins game, September 14th, just to kind of check in with fans and find out what's on your mind about the stadium experience, how you think it's going, etc. Our thanks to Andy for joining us. Our thanks to Greg Gabriel for joining us tonight. The former Chicago Bears, New York Giants personnel man, and, of course, Jim Brandstetter, who set us up for the Bills and the Lions game tomorrow night with his insights on the Detroit Lions. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night. Pre-game coverage on this station and most of our network stations starts at 4 p.m. tomorrow. I'll have the call of the game with Mark Kelso starting at 7 o'clock tomorrow night from the new and improved Ralph Wilson Stadium. Hope you're able to be here. If not, live coverage on the radio. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Mike Jafari, our engineer. Jay Harris, the producer. Bill's director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. We're back here Friday night for the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.